Yeah. I'm glad you tuned in to Soul and Tory on the Hilltop Radio Show. Money Mike. Come on and bring that soulful experience. A little touch of soul from the Soul and Tory. You feel me?
Cue the music, dim the lights, get the wine pouring. Cozy up, settle in, soulful Tory. On the Hilltop, hit you like a lemon drop. Proper light, get you right, mental insights. Wide open, touching you, sexy light. Tory sexy, right, sexy motherfucking right. With the tunes to lock you in, haters spin. DJ Sean, on the tunes, run it again. Or run it up, cause we turn it up. It's getting hot in here, baby, show up. Tune the soul up, it's that feel good. What's said don't need to be explained, understood. Get your mind right, cause the vibe right. Pop the mood off. Connect thoughts, give it to them wrong. Subtle life, you never rush the climax, Tory all night.
If you wanna come and get it, this way it's at. Talk with Tory, got me good, climax. They don't need to look, you look, you know where it's at. Talk with Tory, bring the cloud of honesty. If you wanna come and get it, you know where it's at. Talk with Tory, got me good, climax. They don't need to look, you look, you know where it's at. Bring the cloud of honesty. Hilltop all stars, nigga, from the Cadillacs to the yard. They know where it's at, from Cadillacs to the yard. You know where it's at, it's the Hilltop, baby, now run it back, you know where it's at. Cadillacs to the yard, bring it back, the Hilltop, you know where it's at. Cadillacs to the yard, run it back, worldwide, nationwide, it's too global.
Mike, and of course, Miss Robin Lynn Haven, thank you, my dear, and the Hilltop Radio, this is where it's at, y'all, this is where it's at. That's what's up. I hope y'all ready, because we got a real good discussion that we're going to have tonight. All right. First and foremost, I want to say welcome to the Soulful Experience. I am your host. Do I have my co-host with me tonight, TT, you on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, well, I got my right hand, my co-host, Miss TT the Lioness. Welcome, my dear. How are you today?
I'm pushing. I'm blessed. I'm here. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you so much. And of course, like I said, we got this exciting topic we're going to talk about tonight. But before we get started, DJ Sean, what's going on with you, my dear? How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah. Wonderful. Guess I'm only Negro in the group, but okay.
That's all right. Hopefully we got one more that's going to join, hopefully. But of course, before we get started, I just want to introduce some of the ladies that I have on the panel. As you see, Miss Christine Franklin. How you doing tonight, my dear?
I am doing well, darling. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. And, of course, the one and only Miss Letitia Dorsey, host of B-Radio. How are you, my dear?
I'm great. Thank you for having us. I'm excited about tonight.
Oh, good. I'm glad to have you. Thank you so much for your time. And the same for you, Christine. Thank you. And we got a special guest on tonight, Miss Ashley B. What's up, girl?
What's up? How you doing? So for Tory.
I am wonderful, my dear. I'm wonderful. I'm glad you were able to make it on. And we got one more special guest I want to introduce. Miss Jean Ray. Is that you, my dear?
Yes, ma'am. How are you doing?
You see, we got our ladies all set up and our gents. So we're going to go ahead on and get this thing popping. Now, you know, the topic is, we're going to keep the theme, like I said, as the origins of the Black woman. But tonight, some specifics such as insecurities and perceptions of Black women. Now, I did some reading, and based on some of the reading that I did, I see that we have a lot of insecurities that we deal with on a daily basis, but most of it is related to more of the beauty standards, you know what I'm saying, how our skin, the color of our skin, our hair, but then it just doesn't of the black woman comes from, because it also gives us harmful stereotypes. So they may look at us, you know, as being angry or, you know, always mad about something. But before we get into that part, I just want to talk about some of the unrealistic beauty standards that we face every day. Not just, you know, not just black women, but women, period. But for us out there. So we're going to start off with, like I said, we're going to start off with speaking on the insecurities. Now, one of the insecurities I read on is called Eurocentric ideals. And this is where the black woman is frequently confronted with her lighter skin, straighter hair, and thinning the other black women. This can lead to dissatisfaction of the hair, the skin, the body shape, resulting in inadequacy. You know, who wants me? Who, you know, we're looking down on ourselves. Or maybe you felt like that. Can y'all speak on that? Anybody can start.
Can I go first?
Sure.
Okay, so I face this on a daily basis for myself because I have to be extremely skinny, be beautiful. The color of my skin is a little bit darker than other women, and I used to go through that as a child when kids used to make fun of me because I was darker. So, I mean, I deal with that even to date.
Mm-hmm. I'll say I've encountered this from, it's really interesting. I'm from the north and I'm chocolate, and I never had anybody say anything to me sideways about being brown. I get to the south, I came here for college, and I had a time. I mean, I got into it with a girl. She called me like a jigaboo. I was like,
oh,
what?
Wow.
Straight out of school days.
Yes, indeed.
And it was so crazy because I was like, what are you even talking about? Like, I didn't have any issues until I got here. And it started in college. And college was, oh, what did one boy tell me? Oh, you cute to be dark skinned. And I was like, well, that's not a compliment at all. Mm-hmm. That's a backhand, you know, go to hell. So
pretty much. That's it.
But
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. But you know, we know that, well, if we don't know, and even the young people, they don't know, these things have come from, of course, post-slavery trauma and the whole separate of light and dark and, you know, those kind of things. But with the colorism, like it's still a problem. It's still a problem.
It definitely is. Anybody else have anything they want to say on that?
I have something. This is Ashley B. Experience, like, in terms of colorism. However, you know, I'm a black woman, and even today at my job, I experienced something from someone from a different nationality that, you know, oppressors and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I have my hair done, and even like I've experienced when my locks, because I have locks, long locks, when they're retwisted versus when I let them go, because it's needed. You know, that's like different ways of that people treat me based on how I look. And I was, I was just being cordial with someone else, like your elderly person, but of someone not of my skin tone. And that's, like I said, and that really, I was on my break, so I really didn't even, though I have on my work shirt, I didn't have to do that already. So I'm going to do that no matter who you are, who you look to be. So, yeah, that was my experience today, but even though it's a little bit different based off of your question, so for Tori, I think it still ties into it, like, as you were saying, like, oh, they expect me to be an angry black woman, and in that moment, oh, yeah, I wanted to turn up just a little bit.
Yeah.
Y'all got me a little bit effed up. Like, yes, I understand. I have poise and I know how to conduct myself because I have something to live for, a lot to live for. Yet, at the same time, I'm not going to take disrespect, especially on that level. So that's my two cents.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. My pleasure. Christine, did you want to say anything, add anything to that, my dear?
I can speak on a situation that I experienced. Of course, you know where I'm from, so there were plenty ignorance over as a child. You know, they talk about how big your lips are, calling your porch monkeys yard apes, moon crickets, whatever stupid trope they decided they wanted to say at that moment. In the adult life, I just started this particular job about 7 months ago, and the people before me were not knowledgeable in the job. So, you know, first day on the job, trying to get my bearings and everything, trying to see what's messed up and what I need to fix. So in order for me to know what happened, I'm going to ask the question why certain things are the way they are. So I guess they didn't like the way I was asking the question, or the why this is this way. Why is it this way when you know it's supposed to be this way, or the IRS says look in the company non-compliant. So my boss was at a conference. The broker called him at a conference to tell him that they didn't like the way I was handling myself on the phone. I was being very aggressive. Basically,
wow.
In so many words, calling me the angry black woman.
That's crazy. Oh my God.
All because you're trying to get down, get to the bottom of a matter to try to solve it. They now label you.
What makes it even worse, it wasn't the clear people that called my boss and told them.
It was us.
The other person. Yes. I didn't caught you not doing your job, so now you want to say that I'm being aggressive. No, I'm asking you a direct question. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this when you know you're wrong?
Mm. And that's another thing. That's another thing. Since we're talking about the Eurocentric beauty idea of what a black woman should be, it really frustrates me, especially when we have our own kind, you know what I'm saying, categorize us, put us in a stereotype, unless we grew up with a silver spoon in our mouth. You understand what I'm saying? Not based off of what we know, what, you know, as far as our education, you know what I'm saying? Because it don't matter where I come from. My education says a lot. That's one thing you can't take from me. You feel what? You're going to try to, I can't find a word, but I know what I'm trying to say. So, but your dreams of how I look, who I, you know, my color, my hair, everything just based off what I look instead of just getting to know me, as, you know, this is, I'm talking about our own. You feel what I'm saying? And right. We wonder why we can't move forward.
You're talking about the prejudgment.
That, yeah, already. Exactly. Because you come, that sister's going to check you up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You already in competition, and you just walk through the door. Mm-hmm. You know what
I feel like if you're going to look at my face like that, I need for you to speak to me.
Exactly.
Exactly. Look at my face and not speak. That is the most disrespectful thing.
I agree with you. Me.
Yes. So see, they see us doing this to each other as the state start to stereotype us. And you know what I'm saying? And
I want to disagree. I don't think they see us doing that and then stereotype us. Mm-hmm. They have pre-planned it to be this way.
Based on previous experience.
Well, I think that, you know, if we're talking about our clear vanilla friends.
Yes.
This is what they expect because they set this in motion.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
And I don't, you know, just like some of us don't even know that it, some of them don't understand it. It's been, but it's just like this perpetual toxic cycle that goes on between ourselves and them and back and forth. And it's just like, how do we stop it?
Right. Right. But when go ahead.
I've learned in corporate, when you try to put people up on game, they don't take the advice that you give them. They go take it and run and tell everybody else. That's like, true. You be trying to give them a hint, girl, you might want to chill out on certain stuff. Because, you know, if you in corporate, you hear certain things. So when you try to go to them and tell them, hey, you might need to pipe down on what you're doing, or, you know, hey, you might want to see if you can leave home a little early because, you know, reading between the lines, you know what I'm saying? Right. But then they'll go back behind your back. Well, Christine said that. Really?
Right.
The light on you. Well, we can't say nothing around Christine because she's going to go run and tell it.
And we can't even encourage each other. We can't even, you know what I'm saying? And they do it every day. They do it every day. I don't care how much they hate each other. They might can't stand each other, but they stick together.
You took the words right out of my mouth. And yes, they do.
They do.
And I mean, if anything, we as Black women, that's what we need to do. But going back to what Letitia said, you know, a lot of this comes from, like she said, stems from slavery, because even back in slavery, they pit us against each other. You know what I'm saying? They had the Black men fighting each other. They, you know, all kind of stuff. So, I mean, she's correct. This is nothing instilled since that time. Now, when are we going to get to the point? Because even today, we are still, our minds are still like that. And the thing about it is, we didn't even grow up in that time. You know what I'm saying? We are
carried. The recording has started.
This is being carried from generation to generation. So you're right. When is it going to come a time when we're going to stop? But it's gonna have to start with us. Yeah, I don't know if y'all know, but we outnumber all these people.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, you feel what I'm just saying.
I'm in agreement.
I'm trying to keep it classy, but you know, sometimes it just. But yeah, we outnumber them. So I mean, you know, we have to start somewhere. And we start to spread it out. It got to start somewhere. But we have those people like us that are spread out. But the thing about it is, if we can come in contact, if we can touch, you understand what I'm saying? Even with this radio show, this is what this platform is for. All of those who are listening out there, you know, if you want to call in, you are more than welcome. Phone number 609-663-5493. You know, we want to open this platform for everybody. So we can start. At some point, somebody has to make a stand. Anybody else have anything to say? Go ahead.
I want to say, this is Letitia again. I feel like at this point in my life, I try to live out what it is that I want to see. You know, Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see. Mm-hmm. With a very discerning serpent and gentle as a dove. Mm-hmm. And so that plays out like in the workplace. So I work in education, and I try to just be as loving as possible without being a fool. And, you know, I come in and I'm polite and I'm kind and I'm a team player, even when everybody else is not. But I'm not going to do it to my detriment. And I feel like it, like the butterfly effect or the Mandela effect, it will see and go, you know what? I like that energy, and I want to, you know, be like that. And then another person to be it. And eventually, and sometime in the future, everybody will be in a place where, you know, there's love and kumbaya.
But until then,
I can just only be treated.
That's it.
And that's all I can do. And I also vibrant way. And so, you know, it's a better feeling. If you don't like low vibrational people and you hang out with low vibrational people, that makes you kind of low vibrational. So,
right.
Yeah.
Birds of a feather.
That's, I mean, every time.
Wise. Yeah.
Now, I want to include, go ahead, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I want to add the colorism that you guys were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother's black and my father's Italian. So I'm going back to the 70s when I went to school. Because I was black, my skin color is light, and at that time in my life I had an afro, and I had a pick in my pocket. Mm-hmm. No, seriously, I had an afro, and the teachers were trying to figure out, and the school was trying to figure out someone of my color. Is he black? Is he white? But back in those days, we only had. When you mark something, it was either black or white.
Mm-hmm. Mulatto wasn't a thing back then?
No.
No.
Not yet?
No.
Not
yet.
Nope. And then it was like, then the black kids didn't know, is he black? Is he cool? And then it's like, oh, he has a pick in his pocket, so he's one of us. And then the white kids, oh, he's a wigger. Or Oreo, a skunk. You know, there's a... Those are the names that the white kids was labeling me. The black kids didn't label me that. They said, oh, he's black because he's got a pick in his pocket. Mm-hmm. So, and at that time, I wasn't able to go home and say, am I white or black? Because I was in foster care at that time of my life. So I couldn't ask my parents, and I refused to ask, you know, ask the lady that was with us, because she was an old lady, so you know what I'm saying. So I dealt with the colorism until I moved to another part of Maryland, and then so the color, and until this day, when I did my refereeing, a lot of the schools didn't know how the weather. Well, he's bald headed. Well, at the time I was bald headed. Now, is like, is he white or is he black? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
There's so much emphasis on race.
Yep. Yeah.
My nephew, if I could say this,
go ahead.
He's young. He's 7. However, his mom is Italian and his dad is one of my younger brothers, so African American. So just like hearing your story, DJ Sean, and what you experienced, I'm like curious to what may be, you know, in intel for my nephew, and also, you know, with the state of where the world is now, like there is a lot of work for us to do as a community.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But I learned a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, sometimes you gotta let them know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's black. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all sweet over here. It's not sweet. Like,
no, but seriously, I had to. I had to beat up a lot of people, whether he was white or black, because I got tired of being picked on.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. I got tired of being fingered and whispering, and, you know, even the teachers were whispering and things like that. I had it rough because of color in my skin coming up in the 70s and, you know, half of the 80s. Yeah.
But look how that happened. Now that he was dealing with that, and look on the flip side, by the time we got in elementary school, see, the light skin, that was the right color to be. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was like, oh, if you wasn't light skinned, you wasn't pretty. You know, your hair wasn't pretty. It was all based on that. But look,
is that a southern, a northern southern thing though? Because, like I said, I grew up in Detroit, and light brown, like attractiveness.
I don't know.
I never had any color. Colorism, I went to an all-white school, and it was the worst. It was the worst. Okay. I got called all kind of names. But
it's a southern thing.
I think it is a southern thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a northern thing, too.
Okay, I know that there's a difference between southern and north, just because I'm a, quote-unquote, northerner. But I just recently moved down here, and I've also traveled abroad, and it's like, actually, I have lots. I got, like, 4C here. However, it's moisturized. My point is, though, you know, it's like, girl. Even, like, you know, Sarah, you know, you got, like, other, you know, musicians and artists or creatives, even dancers and different things have at a certain point are complexion. However, it's like almost like it's the same. Just okay, you're maybe wearing a different hat. I'm sorry. I'm maybe like one of the youngest in here. However, that it doesn't matter. However, like, and it hurts my heart because it's like I know there's something for us to do collectively as a community to do. How, like, but some of the things that. It may not be at the same rate and as brash in the same way that our forefathers or people, you know, experienced that I may now experience. I was born in 94, you know?
Wow.
However, it's like I've experienced this. So I'm like, there's a connection somewhere. And that's just my, I'm gonna turn the mic over. But
I think it's, just to add
context.
So,
I think it's how you raised, who raises you, you know, who explains to you, man, I can't even say the damn word right, who explains your history to you. I think that's how, you know, that's why I was confused. It wasn't explained, you know.
Wow.
I couldn't get it home, and I couldn't get it at school because, hell, the guidance counselors wouldn't even call you in the office to talk to you, you know, back in those days. Yeah, so I just went with the flow. Yeah.
Well, DJ Sean, let me ask you this from a male's perspective. Was there a certain standard as far as for the young males, you know, for black men coming up when you were younger? Was there a certain standard for y'all?
Yeah, sports. Baseball, football, basketball, sports was pretty much really, if you succeeded in those sports, then you were so-called the man.
So that was pretty much like some of, like it is today, that was kind of your way out.
That's your way out. Yeah, honestly.
Okay. So this is John Ray.
Go ahead.
So some of what y'all experienced, I experienced, but it's in three different ways. And as far as in a family, there was colorism. Because you may have been, like in certain families, and my family included, we had the Jamaican. We're also... Cherokee Indian, which everybody says, oh, everybody is. No, we actually did have that in our family. So we had different colors of skin. We had different textures of hair. And we had a difference in height. So the way certain ones' hair and skin look kind of made a difference in how much support you got in your family, how they loved on you.
Yeah.
And that's a sad situation to grow up in, because then you feel that my skin is too dark, because we had one cousin whose skin is beautiful. Well, she was. She's passed now. She was what they considered blue-black. And compared to everybody else, she was black. But she was beautiful. Now, everybody else had different skin colors. So she was treated differently, because she was darker than everybody else, had beautiful black hair. But you can tell the difference between her skin and her hair, because she was so dark. But nobody thought that she had beautiful skin. No acne, no nothing. She had beautiful skin. So why is it that inside? We talk about being black, being a female. Okay, she already had a strike by being black. She already had a strike by being female. But in your family, that unit, that's where you should be getting your support.
Right.
And yet, when you go to school, you're getting called tar baby. Mm-hmm. And then you come home and having your family to call you black, blackie, all the names you can, monkey, every name under the sun. Mm. And then you have your light-skinned cousin who everybody think is so, she's so pretty, and the expectations are, you black, you ain't gonna go anywhere. You light-skinned, you're gonna be something. You're gonna make money. People gonna accept you. So that's I see as an issue within our own race. And not only with females, women, and looking at who's considered beautiful. If you had a gap in your mouth, because that's something that I experienced in my household with my daughter, by the beauty standards. She was dark skin or caramel brown, but she had a gap. And that was when they was pushing a lot of braces. Because before, you know, it was all kind of nicknames given to her. But being that I'm her mom, I was like, no, you're not going to grow up thinking that because you're black and you're brown skin and you have a gap, you're not beautiful. It was my job to instill in her that you're still beautiful. That's what makes you unique. You don't have to fix that. You fix it if you want to. And it was like just looking in what the news, she came home one day crying because somebody was talking about her gap. And she says, I'm not beautiful. Who told you that? Well, in the magazine, when the kids was talking about my gap, and I was like, well, there are plenty of people that got gaps.
Yeah.
And they're very beautiful. Now, she got noticed. She don't even care anymore. She actually like hers. It's she definitely smiled the biggest smile.
I can remember my oldest daughter when she kind of had an issue when she went to school. And then she would... And her mother didn't really know how to talk with her like I did. And I remember, Dad, what color am I? I said, you're beautiful. That's what color you are. You're beautiful.
Yeah.
So if anybody asks you, I said, so if anybody asks you what color you are, you say, I'm beautiful. And you walk away.
So I was, I'm late to the party for the show Sinners, like the movie Sinners, so I just saw it last night, and all of the different color dynamics. But I love, I can't think of the character, what was her name, the dark skin, the hoodoo, she was with,
oh, I know you're talking about,
yeah,
I don't know her name, but I know who you're talking about. She was like the lady, because she
the hoodoo lady, right? And she was blackberry dark, right? And what made her character, because, you know, dark women, traditionally, we've been maids, and we the funny friend, and the sidekick, and the side piece, and all of these things, but not the, you know, main character.
The main one, yeah.
The main one, yeah.
And so here she is, giving mad main character energy, and dark as the night, and loved and in loved, and it was so powerful to me. That says so much to me, because back, you know, in our movies, we weren't even, that's not how we were portrayed. I mean, every now and then, like a you know, you got you a Diane Carroll, or not Diane Carroll, but
got a I was just agreeing with you, but you gotta remember your sororities. And look at number of light skinned people.
Oh, yeah. let me tell you, I went to Spelman, and I didn't even know there was a paper bag there. If you weren't paper bag tan and higher and lighter, you wasn't getting into some of these schools and getting into these organizations. There was a whole.
How long was that? Because like I said, later on, I didn't. You know, I thought I did even. I'm not affiliated. Anyways, I just want to know, like what age, I mean, not age range, what, like, before it changed over, and I may do my research, but if you know, please let me know.
I just want to add this real quick. When I went to well, I was kind of like, as I got older, and, you know, and most of the people that I went to school with were light-skinned, you know, Very seldom, you know, a person, and this is in Maryland. But when I got, when I graduated from high school and went to college, I saw a whole different, this is the in the early 90s. This is 91, 92, because I graduated in 89. I saw a whole different color of people. And I'm like, wow, dark skin, you know, women out here, you know, gap teeth. And I was like, man, it isn't nothing like a dark-skinned woman with a gap tooth. You know what I'm saying? And this is a whole thing. My attitude started changing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to give everybody love.
Yeah,
just one color, and that's what changed me when going to college, and meeting different, you know, African girls. You know, it was all, well, at that time the black colleges, you didn't have any white, no white kids in college at that time at the black. Nope. Colleges, and like you do now, but back then it wasn't. It was different color skins: brown skin, light brown, dark skin. You know, chocolate.
Wasn't it beautiful though? It was so beautiful.
Yeah,
man.
Blackberry. You know, blackberry was. It was a whole different wave.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started understanding, it's not the skin color; it's the person.
Right.
In the skin, yeah.
Well, before 1960, the paper bag tests for the fraternities, it was like before the 60s. So it ain't really way long ago.
Exactly. Because my mom was born in 94. I mean, I'm sorry, 64. Excuse me.
Yep.
Sorry.
That's what's up. But you know what? That takes me back to... the show A Different World. You know, A Different World, we looked at, okay, A Different World meaning, okay, they're going to college, they're about to experience college life. But think about the title, A Different World. DJ Sean said it best. When it's not just about the college experience, it's about the different cultures, the different ethnicities that you're going to meet, because you are going to, it's almost like a culture shock when you go into college, especially your first year. So to experience that, and I wish I would have took the opportunity, but I didn't. But to experience that, I also had the chance to experience going abroad, going out further to even, you know, to experience more. But I, out of fear of travel, I didn't. But I mean, like, but that was one way of me seeing what this world can offer, and how many of us, because we just, like he said, I just grew up seeing light-skinned, dark-skinned, white people. That's it. But to go there and you see the plethora, the different, man, we make some beautiful-ass colors. Do you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I have a question for John Ray. You was military, right? What did you get the color struck in the military when you did your time?
That in itself, that was almost it. That still happens to this day. They don't address it. They address. I'm trying to find the best way to say it, because there is so much stuff that does happen in the military that America does not know.
I can just imagine.
I mean, it's so much. From promotions to transfers, you want it, but they do not always avoid it. They do try to address it. But you always have that one individual. And I say individual because we're supposed to be one team. But you have that one individual that has that rank on their chest and it goes to their head, and they exercise their individuality to exert their dominance. No matter where they're at, what they do, they use their position to be a blocking to somebody.
Mm.
And that's the nicest way I can say it without saying everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it does still happen, just like it does in society. It's just happening in different ways. But it's not like it's not being checked, but there are some areas where it is unchecked. Mm. And it's sad because it makes people want, it changes the dynamic and mindsets of someone to where they no longer want to be a part of something that is life-changing, because being in the military is life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people came in because they were homeless. Some people came in because they wanted to do something for their family. And all it takes is that one experience where somebody mistreat them because of the color of their skin. And one of the biggest issues that, as a female, we had, and this is one of the, those are some of the things that up until I retired a few years ago, we were still fighting for the right to be able to wear braids a certain way. We were fighting to be able to wear locks, because a lot of us would have to take our locks down or cut our locks or get relaxers. And so a lot of times when you see a lot of us in the military, we were wearing wigs, we were wearing sew-ins, or we had no edges because of the stress of trying to look a certain way and meet a certain unrealistic hair standard that ethnically we could not do because our hair couldn't do it.
I want to add to that. I was on the panel for the Navy that brought in all the African American hair products. I was working for the Navy Exchange during the time, and yes, it was a huge problem. They had Caucasian women trying to speak up for us, and then salon manager, and I worked for NEXCOM, the corporate office, and I worked for all the barbershops and beauty salons and for the Navy, and they called me in, and I was the one that had to stand up for all of our African-American sisters to say, hey, we don't use Paul Mitchell. We don't use, you know, all these other, Amica and Deadhead and all that kind of stuff with moisture in it. So they end up allowing me to bring in a whole entire 32-foot planogram of all African-American products inside the barbershops and beauty salons worldwide and inside the Navy exchanges. I think the Air Force was doing it prior to us, but it was a fight. It was really a fight. And I had to actually go in and show them my hair and had to bring in models to show that this stuff does not work on our hair. And it took a cosmetologist, because I am a cosmetologist as well, to have to fight for our African-American sisters, you know, in the military. Their hair back, it puts so much stress on their edges. And working in the beauty salon, that's what we were fighting against, trying to grow their edges back. Because they had to gel on it so much. It was it was really a fight. So I salute you for sticking in there. My husband was Navy, but I was on that panel, and I was the only African-American that actually made that happen for the Navy.
And for the military, Army itself, really, when I say we just got that, the standards for our hair approved, literally,
I remember
it was
that.
Within the last 4 to 5 years, actually, because I was finally able to say we can wear our braids a certain type of way. Box braids, a certain way. They wanted to have dress right dress in our parts. They wanted our cornrows to be dress right dress. And when I say dress right dress, that means the parts have to be shown. Curl pattern is different. We couldn't always wear it that way. Then we couldn't wear certain colors. When I say the standards were there, they didn't understand that when we, why is your hair frizzing up? I was like, I got curly hair. It's not going to lay straight like hers. Because when that water and that sun or sweat hit it, it's going to roll back up.
Yeah.
What can we do to keep it down and have it lay straight? Because you know it's supposed to be a certain type of way. I'm not putting a relaxer in my hair. for a while I did do a relaxer, but those chemicals were breaking my hair off. So I went completely natural. Edges was coming out, and I couldn't take it. A lot of people, when you see women come out of the military, our edges are so frail. If we have any, when we get out, we are lucky. I just now can say I have some edges. And I've been out almost 3 years.
Wow.
It takes you a while because it is so bad. Like, you're... Yes.
Oh, yes.
It stresses our hair because when we get our braids, they have to pull back. We have to wear that for extended period of time, and I was active duty.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not an understanding of them understanding how that weight did our hair. Because also, some of us had migraines because of the way we were in our hair. But they didn't take an account of that because that pressure on your head, that ball on our head. So it's a lot of things that they didn't understand. It's a lot.
Who's
seriously, okay, because and you may already know about these products. I'm going to let you, like, as I said, like, I have long locks. I'm not that type of person to, like, hold back information. Like, come on, because our edges are everything. Uh-huh. That's the beginner point of us as a black woman. Like, what?
Uh-huh.
Like, so I will share, you know, just let Sophie Tour, you know, or TT, or I'm open. What I wanted to say is I'm open to letting you know what I know works for me, and it may or may not, because like you said, like, all of our hair is different, but oh no. Like, they can't take it from us. They try to, you know, in their own. And when I say they, it's different entities.
Yeah.
However, and for all, like, oh my God, you just.
So I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying this is at that time, a lot of the products we have now, we didn't have then. So the stress of being in for, I've been in for over 10 years. So prior to that 10-year mark, we weren't allowed to use, this is some things that they don't know. We can't use all products on our hair while we're in because they have, we can't use when we were away on missions. So a lot of times what we use when we're home, we can't use when we're away, when we're on extended missions. So that was where the changes had to come about because there were stipulations on what we could and couldn't use on our hair when we are away on duty, that a lot of American didn't know that we can't use this stuff with perfumes, some of that we couldn't use. And then a lot of the products have been changed and upgraded to accommodate the different textures of women of color. And so the advances they've made were not there 10 years ago. They were not there not even 7 years ago. We've had major advancements since 2010, 2012, 2014. We got new products that have come out that help with alopecia, different things. Not saying it's going to change it, but they got stuff out there. That stress starts, it's there. It takes a while to reverse that. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in 6 months because you don't know each person's hair care. And that was the biggest thing that we had. And when we finally got the rules and regulations updated back here about 5 years ago, it was major for us because we then could actually, we felt like we were being heard. We didn't feel like we were outside. We felt like we were a part of the team. Now, that doesn't mean, because we also have uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that a lot of people, we got uniforms, started incorporating male and female uniforms. While outside, one of the biggest things of being woman of color, we are shapely. And they all expect us to wear things a certain type of way. That's the one thing that people kind of have an issue with. We are naturally that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the respect of being that way is not there.
Right.
And it's over-sexualized. And sometimes they look at seeing, you know, light skin from a certain, that's not coming from outside of our race, that's coming inside our race. Mm-hmm. So we as a people really judge each other. We are harsh on our people than anybody else, it seems like. And that's hurtful. Why not embrace and respect that each one of us is shaped different? Mm-hmm. And each one has something to offer in this world. Not just our skin, not just our hair, not just the wideness of our nose. How about we understand that everybody's uniqueness is beautiful? And stop saying, she got a big old nose. Look at them big old satellite dishes on their head. Trust me, heard it all, because I have a child with big ears, and they call them monkey satellites. And that's because she was younger. Her ears were not attached to her head. When she got older, them things attached, and she grew to them ears. But in the meantime, you guys, they're talking about it, but it's not opposite race. It's our own people talking about each other. And that goes back to what was said earlier, back in the slavery, when they had us petted against us. Light skin, we're in the house, they would call house niggers, or they would call other things. I know we're not supposed to say that word, but that's what they say.
It's reality.
It's house ninjas. Then we have the one with the pretty hair. Okay, so guess what? It made us want to have a child with masses so our child can have an opportunity. Because in our mind, if our child has beautiful hair and light skin, they're going to make some of themselves. So that was the conditioning of us to feel that our dark skin was a sin. And it's not. It's a blessing. All that melon.
That's it.
All that melon. Melon is beautiful.
Who was the lady? The lady from the Navy. What was your name?
Montreal.
Montreal. Okay.
Okay. Yes, I had a story as well, and my husband is here, Shelfit. His mom didn't like me, and it took 20 years. She didn't like me for 20 years, even though I was his wife. She said I was too dark with nappy hair.
Oh, Lord.
And she actually told him, don't you marry that nappy-headed black girl, because you're going to have nappy-headed grandkids. She was going to have nappy-headed grandkids. But he didn't listen to her, of course. We still married. But it took 20 years for her to break that barrier, for me to actually say something, because I always respected her still, you know, no matter what she said, because she was, you know, his mother. You know, her and I. And one day he was out to sea. He was out to sea for 6 months or something in the Navy. And I let her have it. I asked him, I said, is it okay if I tell her exactly how I feel? Because she's sitting here treating me like shit again. And sure enough, she, I was able to say what I wanted to say without him being present, because I never wanted to put him in the middle of it. So while he was out to sea, I said what I wanted to say. And ever since then, I've had nothing but respect. But one thing, She loved her grandkids, and I do have one that is very dark. He's dark, my middle son. The other two were light skinned, loving to death. But the dark one, he's like, I call him my Hershey bar, because his skin is just as smooth as, I mean, it's very smooth. Mm-hmm. And she said a couple of things about him, but I heard, you know, through the family that she talked about him pretty bad, saying that wasn't her son's child and all this other stuff, because he was just too dark. He was just too dark. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that looks just like my husband. He's just a darker version of my husband. But she worked at St. Joseph here in Houston, and when she filled out her application back in the day, she put on there that she was white.
Wow.
She's Creole. Oh. She's Creole. She worked at St. Joseph for 40 years. And but that's what she was taught. And when we were younger, when we first got married, we went to a funeral to one of his family members, and we had to sit in the back, and we could not tell people that we were part of the family. We had to say that we were part of the help.
Wow.
What?
That was in the 90s, I mean, 2000. His aunt was living as Caucasian. She was a Frenchman. Her husband was white. And all the darker skinned people had to sit in the back and say that we were part of the help, because he still and his family still did not know that she was Creole. She was black.
Tori, so you know how the Creole people be acting down in that bayou.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's,
I know.
It's still.
Wow. That's
but that is.
But I still respect my husband's mother. That's the way she was raised. I never talked back until that one day that my husband said, baby, I'm not there. Do what you need to do. And I let her ask.
How did it feel?
Yes.
I felt relieved. And I have to be honest with you. He never heard her talk to me in a certain, because she talked to me real nasty as well. And we went to the beach house for 1 year, and he walked in and heard her how she talked to me. He actually broke down and cried and said, he said, Mama, my wife always told me that you talked to her outside of your neck, and now I get to see it. She tried to change it. No, you don't understand. He said, Mama, I've been standing here all this time, and to know that my wife been putting up with all of this all these years. So he packed up me and my kids, and we all left. We all left because I've never treated her any different. Every year that lady got a gift, even though I knew how she felt about me, she made me stand outside from inside. I mean, it was just like, but that was black on black. But it was just
love prevails. And I just wanted to say, I think we have to remember that it's not just an emotion, that these things weren't built on just emotions and aesthetics. These things were sometimes built on life and death. And, you know, when we talk about being alive because you can pass for white, or being hunted down like a dog because you were, you know, dark skinned. And when we talk about blood memory and epigenetics that keeps things trapped in our DNA. And so, you know, sometimes we kind of think it's real shallow, but it's not shallow at all. So there's a call for healing that is, it's a call for healing for our people that's deeper than just, light skin, dark skin. It's a deep dive into our bloodlines and removing those things. Because when I think about that movie last night, Sinners, that chick, my daughter was looking at me like, I thought she was white. I was like, no, she passing for white. And we don't really, I don't know, in my time, you don't even know if you know somebody that's passing for white, unless you know they was passing for white. And Louisiana, that's big time. And, that's big time in Louisiana, Creoles and the half, but it was a life or death matter.
Yeah. That was like, when I refereed a game in Delaware, and, I never forget the day a coach called me the N word. And, coach called me the N word. And then, the crew that I was working with, it was two of us was black and the other ones was white. And when they heard it, they already knew to run to show you something. And I'll never forget Chris Bosies, he was a white guy. He said, did I hear what you're ready to do? I said, I'm getting ready to go over and talk with him. So I went over there, I went right straight to the coach, because I had a habit of introduce myself to all the coaching staff so I can recognize their voices, so I know when I had to throw a flag on the coach, I know the right coach to throw the flag on. So I walked over to him. I said, thank you for the recommendation of calling me the N-word. I said, but I'm more white than you are. And I walked away. And everybody, people stood there and they were looking at each other, all stupid looking and everything like that. But I've been called the N-word. I've been called Wigger and everything else. And this was in the 90s and the 2000s, and still on until I retired from officiating. I've heard it on the football field, and I've heard it on the basketball court. So it's still something today. Even black coaches, you know, look at you different as well, too. Yeah.
But you know, what's interesting about when we talk about colorism and black people, colors is a construct. DNA test, I was very disappointed, because as chocolate as I am, I was 30% like Irish, which is a lot. because I was adopted. And so then to further find out that my great-great-grandmother was from Mexico and my mother's parents, my grandparents, who I don't know any of them, probably were, I'm not saying they were white passing, but they were very, 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 very fair skinned mm-hmm. and moved from the South to the North and were living their lives in a different kind of way. And so when you look at your DNA, it's a DNA. My husband, who is extremely light skinned, is actually more African than I am. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, to judge each other, that, but see, this is all mm-hmm. anyway, the mm-hmm. color thing and the colorism, because it gave them a one up on us, but it really isn't real, because some of us, just because you're brown, don't make you blacker than somebody.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we're gonna take just a quick little music, y'all. But I want to encourage you ladies on the panel and you ladies out there that are listening, embrace your beauty. Embrace your hair, your skin, and everything there is about you. God knew what he was doing when he made you. You are beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh,
right now. All right. I had to play that one. I love that song, Strength Curry.
Boy.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Man, yes, I love that song. When I first heard that, I was like, you know what? That's one of those songs I would play somewhere, like going on my way to work, because I did not want to be there. But to give me the strength, courage, and wisdom to do my job and to be the best tour there is. You know what I'm saying? And I just played that because I wanted to encourage you and as well as myself out there that we got it on the inside of us. We got it. It's hard, but as long as we have that strength, courage, and wisdom, we're going to make it. It's right there. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Did y'all have anything else y'all want to say? We're going to get off in just a minute. Go ahead, but go ahead.
I wanted to bring something. This is TT. So bringing back to the colorism, like I'm scared of the world that my niece and my nephew. So it's like, it's very strange when we get stopped by strangers just walking around the store. It was like, oh my God, I just wanted to stop you to see, is she albino? And I'm like, yes. Like, what's the problem? So they treat my niece and my nephew That's differently weird. In my family because of the color of their skin and because of what they are.
Mm-hmm. That is very weird, especially when it comes to that. When it comes to albinos, are they considered black? I've never grown up with any of them. I've met one or two in my life, but what are they really? Are they considered black, or how do they?
That's a gene thing.
It's a gene.
Yeah, it is a gene thing.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother is a carrier, and that's how his two children are. They're the only ones out of
five. Okay, so that it could be a gene thing in a white person. It could be a gene thing in. Okay, all right. I thought that was just something that was in our culture. Yeah, I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm ignorant to it, but I don't know a lot of them, and I don't know a lot about it. But
it's nothing to apologize for, because like before my niece was born, like I didn't come across a lot of albinos, so I had to do a lot of research and looking it up myself because I have a niece and a nephew.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what? That would have been something also good to talk about as well if I had someone that is an albino that could tell us about that.
I know someone. Yes, I know someone, and she is a radio host here in Pensacola, actually. And she's albino, and she's went through a lot. My mom has known her for years, and she's been through a lot, you know, growing up albino.
Oh, I can just imagine. I can just imagine. But as far as with the insecurities that we face, that also tends to stereotype us because they already feel like we're unhappy. You know what I'm saying? But we are unhappy. You know, and it's not just it's not about the color or anything. We're unhappy about the way we're the unfair treatment that we get, the treatment. We're unhappy about the as far as the pay. You know, our pay compared to men's pay, we could do the job just as good as they can, but they still tend to pay us less. Let's go to the WNBA, but I know what they're going to say. I know somebody going to say something about WNBA. They play just as hard as the men, but they get paid less.
That's true.
So, I mean, and look how far the WNBA has come now.
Right.
You know, and it's, I mean, come on now. We every time you look up, we on TV. So it's like, I'm saying we because I'm representing the females, but on TV. Go ahead.
But you got to remember, at one point in time, the WNBA was sponsored by the NBA. Because you got to remember when the 96 team won the Olympics. That's when every NBA franchise ended up with a WNBA franchise in the same city and state. Mm-hmm. Because here in Charlotte, it was the Charlotte Sting, which they don't have that no more, but they're now the funding and the popularity of the WNBA, the women now that are in college, that are really making women's college basketball 10 times more important than the men's basketball. Now the women's college basketball are now getting that money that should have been given to them way back when, because every young girl now, you know, it's not, they're not going to the store buying the Michael Jordans and stuff. They're going to the store buying, you know, the Angel Reese's sneakers and the Caitlin Clarks and stuff like that. They're actually buying, and you see men now are purchasing WNBA gear to wear.
DJ Sean, do you think the popularity of the WNBA started with Angel and Caitlin,
or no,
was the beginning prior to them?
It was beginning prior to them, but they actually put the WNBA on the map. They popularized the WNBA to what it is now. Ratings. I mean, look at the commercials now. Look at it. Look at all the young girls now. They're recruiting young ladies now in elementary school.
Yeah.
They're going to basketball tournaments, following these young ladies in elementary school, middle school. And by the time they get to high school, they are already trying to sign them to come to university. Oh, giving them deals.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're doing it like that? I didn't know they were going young.
Like that. It's going like that. It's because the men used to do that, elementary school, follow them all the way to high school, and then give them a, as soon as they got in the ninth grade, giving them a deal. Now they're doing it. Now it's both ways. You know, look at Dawn Stanley, what she done down here in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So all around the world. You know, all around the world. You know, they're going and getting these 6'10", 6'7", 6'6" young ladies from other countries, and they're bringing them over here and giving them a trade, which is basketball. Yeah.
Now, even though we're talking about the women tour, you know, they're kind of rolling out the red carpet for your nephew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, my nephew.
Even as a freshman.
Yeah, my nephew is, what, 13 and 6'8"?
Damn, what the hell y'all gave him to eat?
Man, I don't know.
Raw fish?
I know, look, what that must come from off our side, but yeah, he is, I think he's a sophomore, and he's already number one pick for 2027. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Football
and basketball, actually.
I take the basketball scholarship. More money.
Okay, I might have to talk to them about that. But yeah, I'm glad. I will say this on the subject of, we were talking about the WNBA. Wow. I'm just glad that women are making their mark, especially the ladies with WNBA, in corporate America, wherever. I'm seeing that more of us are starting to stand at our mark, whether it's starting our own business or whatever. Mm-hmm. We are starting to do more, but we have to remember, it all starts with us. It is a mindset. And like we were saying in the conversations earlier, I didn't think about this, and it was my girl Jean Ray, she brought it up. A lot of the times it starts in the home also, you know, it from the home, especially nowadays, it's got to start in the home. That way branches out into the community. But, it, you know, the communities and stuff are not like it was when we were growing up. You know, if you did something at school, you know, the whole street gonna whip your ass by the time you get home. You know what I'm saying? Everybody is gonna whip your butt. But nowadays, you know, they're trying to bring it back. He's trying to bring it back. But, you know, we don't have that where everybody step in and
there's some states that have passed bringing paddling back to the school system.
But see, I
veto it.
You say you vetoed it?
I didn't veto. I work in a school, and I'm not against it.
because the kind of people that are in schools,
yes,
they shouldn't have. Most people knew what was happening inside of schools.
The parents just didn't miss the students.
I'm talking about inside of the schools where the workers,
just in school, period.
The educators, yeah. Or yeah. So-called educators. I would not, if people knew what was really happening, I wouldn't give anybody authority to touch my child inside of a school.
Mm-mm. Especially nowadays.
Especially nowadays.
Now. No. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Yeah, some are feeling extra emboldened to do and say a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Especially if they could go back to the ruler days of the classroom.
Right.
Yeah, I've got my ass tore plenty of times with the ruler.
Oh my god.
That part.
Sometimes,
well, yeah, sometimes, to do it together.
Sometimes I got hit just because of the skin color.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. And honestly, my locks, and I've had them for about, 12 years, but I cut them down in the last 5. It's also a statement for how proud I am of who I am. And if my hair is moisturized, it doesn't have to be retwisted, because we all know if you have locks, and you retwist it too much at a certain length, it's not good for you. Like, it's going to break off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the same time, it's also like a heralding, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am proud of who I am, and I come from a bloodline and ancestors that ate pecans off of a tree while they were in pursuit of their degrees. FAMU, shout out to my granddad, but it's like, I come from people in my bloodline, and it's like, they're not with me and living anymore, yet this is the legacy. So, all that to say, I'm proud of my hair, and you're just going to be hit with it, because honestly, it's coming, and I'm not going to put myself in a box. I'm going to let the light shine, like my grandma said.
You shouldn't have to hide yourself, though, you know?
Exactly, but then, you know, if you're in an environment, and for me it is, you know, in my day job, whatever, and the one that is like me or looks like me is not in the same department, so it's almost like I'm fighting, but at the same time, I know who's with me, I know who I am, so that. Don't try to play with me. So that's all I have to say. Like, yeah.
So you got a whole nother department messing with you about your locks.
So it's not even.
Did I misunderstand it?
It's not directly in who I work with, but it's the people who come in the front door, like customers. Like, for example, I was going out to lunch today. I still had on my work shirt, so it. Obviously, it looked like I worked there. However, it was the latter end of my break, and I was going, since I worked by Sam's, I was going there, meet up with a family member to get some food. But at the same time, it was an elderly person of my palm. Like some of your sales, like a genius. Yeah. It's like that scruggly, ugly. Scuggly guggly, let me say that.
What in the world?
If you get it, you get it. Like, they weren't young, is what I'm trying to say. And I came out of the exit door, so I was coming out of the door. You shouldn't have been entering as someone entering into into the store.
Uh-huh.
But I came out, I held the door. I didn't have to. Held it. He said to me,
You're such a gentleman. I'm like, now I'm a hair tied back. But beyond that, what?
Just a song. You know,
it's not given that. It's not given that at all. I heard him say that, and the way I, like, sometimes I'll cuss people out with my eyes. I won't say it. Yeah. But the look I give you, it's like your grandmama or your mama looking at you in church. You better not.
And she go.
Up in this store or wherever we at. Right. It was that look, and then he's, as he was going into, but he still wasn't fully into the business, like into the complex. And he was like, okay. No, he didn't even say okay. He said, oh, I meant young lady. By that point, I kept walking, and I said, oh, yeah, uh-huh.
That is not like, what the hell he meant.
I'm not even looking back, because now, like, you're testing me, and I could react or respond. I could be that angry black woman. I could be that, but I have so much to lose, and beyond that, it's about how you respond. It's not even about my soul, rest in peace. Moving with a spirit of excellence, no matter what. And that was the person that I said in my family that while he was attending FAMU, he didn't have the support. He was eating literally almonds off of his best friend's tree in their backyard that he knew. He was working in, you know, and they are, and like the cafeteria to help pay for his way. He was a drum major. So, anyways, that's all I have to say. Like, I love the big thing as always, and I'm going to turn it over to Emmy. So, but yeah, like, this has been so.
Y'all getting a treat because she don't usually talk
this. Yeah, that's why I was letting her. But,
That is a good thing.
Yes. But before we get ready to leave tonight, I just want to encourage you ladies, and I want to encourage other ladies out there listening again, just to embrace who you are. You know, you deserve to be pampered. Sometimes it don't cost no money. You could do that yourself. Just love yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I want to encourage you to be the best you that you can be. Now, do y'all have any words of encouragement for those listening out there, and also for the ladies that are on the panel, just for each other? Anybody?
I'll go. Ladies, keep being beautiful. Keep being you no matter what. Love yourself.
I'll say loving yourself definitely comes from under